This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Douglas Impoga in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The situation is dire. We are desperately waiting for the rains because there's no water. Most of our boreholes have dried up, and this has resulted in the death of at least 55 elephants and all other species which are also succumbing to this situation.
That's Zimbabwe's National Park spokesperson, Tinashe Farao, on drought conditions that have killed at least 55 elephants and other wildlife in Hawange National Park. Also, the first Africa-Russia summit is underway, and a batch of Central African Republic refugees is headed home from Cameroon. We'll have these stories and more, so stay with us. There's a lot more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, Russian President Vladimir Putin opened a major summit today aimed at reviving Russia's influence in Africa, telling leaders from the continent he would seek to double trade in the coming years. All 54 African states were represented at the first Russia-Africa summit in the Black Sea resort of Sochi, with Putin set to hold bilateral talks throughout the day. VOA's Jamie Detmar is in Russia and following the summit. I reached him a short while ago for an update on the summit.
There are about 3,000 at least representatives from every single African state. There are 44 prime ministers and presidents. It's the biggest gathering of African dignitaries in Russia since the end of communism, since the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991. And the Kremlin has been putting out all the stops to get as many African politicians to attend. The last few years, they've been crisscrossing the continent as much as possible to get people to come to Sochi.
Is the primary focus of this summit trade?
Well, that's the position of the Kremlin. It's primarily about trade and cooperation with African states. We had the announcement today by Vladimir Putin that they're forgiving about $20 billion of Soviet-era debt that African states owned Russia. On the other hand, that debt has never been repaid in all the years since. A lot of Western debt hasn't and has been forgiven as well. Yes, certainly they want to increase trade in the nuclear field, in raw minerals, in agriculture. But at the same time, despite what the Russian president is saying, there's no political strings attached to this trading. The Kremlin sees this as a geopolitical move as well, and Kremlin officials are not shy about bragging that they will restore Russian influence on the continent in competition with Western states, including the United States, and with China. And there are arms trading is a lot behind this. There are 23 security cooperation deals already signed between African states and Russia. They're now the biggest supplier of arms to the continent, and they want to increase that.
You talk of the Soviet era. Moscow was a crucial player in Africa in the Soviet era, backing independence movements and training a generation of African leaders. But in recent years, China has emerged as a top foreign player on the continent. Do you think Russia is playing catch-up?
Well, I think it is catch-up. They're coming this late in the game. Their trade is worth about $20 billion compared to $200 billion in terms of the Chinese trading with Africa. The European Union is trading, I think, the value about $300 billion. So it is a bit of a catch-up situation for them. Of course, in the Soviet era, they were big players in Africa. When the Soviet Union collapsed, they were cash-strapped, they were disoriented, they were really focused on themselves, the Russians, and so this has been a late spurt. And some of it is propelled in terms of geopolitical competition, but as well as that, because of Western sanctions on Russia, they are looking for new trading partners.
In the Soviet era, they had an influence on some African countries, but now it seems, given the number of presidents attending, they want the whole continent.
Well, yes, I mean, they are trying to revive some of those old ties with places like Angola and Mozambique, but they're also trying to shape and craft new ties, for example, with Nigeria, which is a former British colony, as you know. It's a mixture of an old approach and a new one.
That was VOA's Jeremy Detmar. He spoke with me from Karelia, Russia. Strong turnout marked the start of voting today in Botswana, where the ruling Botswana Democratic Party, BDP, is facing its stiffest challenge ever to its 53-year rule. From Habarone, Botswana, Mukondisi Dube has more.
Long queues marked the start of voting in Botswana's closely contested general election on Wednesday. Some voters were in line as early as 3 a.m. to cast their vote, with polling stations opening 3 hours later. Independent Electoral Commission Public Relations Officer Uzile Maroba said voting began without any major incidents, but some polling stations opened later than the scheduled time.
Everything has started well, even though we have some few police stations that opened later than 6:30, owing to some logistical challenges. So far, quite a number of police stations are experiencing a large turnout.
Bonisani Pepeng is voting for the first time, and she was happy that it has been a peaceful process.
I've just voted here in Botswana, and I really appreciate the way things went. The queues, yes, were very long, but it was very peaceful. Things were just done in a very orderly manner.
The pre-election period was marked by bitter exchanges among rival parties as tensions rose. The opposition coalition, the Umbrella for Democratic Change, UDC, had questioned the integrity of the process, citing the meddling of government agencies in the elections. UDC President Duma Boko, after casting his vote in Habron this morning, told reporters the process had been smooth.
For me, it was a very smooth process, and I hope it is as smooth for everybody as it was for me. So we'll see as the day goes by, and we'll keep track of what is happening.
His main rival, incumbent President Mokgweetsi Masisi, voted in his home village Moshupa, just outside Habaroni. Former President Ian Khama, who formed an opposition party, the Botswana Patriotic Front, BPF, cast his vote in the country's key central district. Habaroni resident Tikarabo Ramadu was happy with the way voting proceeded, in sharp contrast to what has been an aggressive campaign.
I'm very, very impressed about the conduct of my fellow citizens. If you rewind the clock and think of the time when they were still campaigning, there were all sorts of statements being made across the board from each party. But today, there is so much cooperation.
Polling stations will close at 7 p.m. local time, with full results expected on Friday. The country has 925,000 registered voters who will vote for 57 members of the National Assembly. The winning party will pick the country's next president. Mukondisi Dube for VOA News, Habaroni, Botswana.
And today, Tunisia's new president took office. After being sworn in, Kais Saied pledged to support women's rights and respond to the demands of the country's youth for employment and dignity. Saied was elected earlier this month to replace the late Beji Caid Essebsi, who died in office in July. Saied, a former law professor, also said he would tackle the roots of extremism and government waste, vowing to never waste a cent of public money. Saied is a political outsider, and his election is being seen as a blow against the governing elite, which failed to improve the economy and living conditions. However, he will have to govern with a divided parliament, which analysts say could hamper his efforts to fight corruption and high unemployment. Cameroon's government says more than 400 refugees from the Central African Republic have agreed to voluntarily return home today, while others are set to follow later this year. VOA's Jackson Mvunganyi spoke with reporter Moki Edwin Kinzika from a refugee camp in eastern Cameroon. He says the refugees agreed to repatriate following an agreement between the governments of Cameroon, Central African Republic, and the United Nations Refugee Agency in June.
I am precisely at Gadde Bajiri, a refugee camp in eastern Cameroon, sharing boundary with the Central African Republic, where about 400 Central African Republic refugees have agreed to go back to their countries. And the 400 who are living now are saying that they have hope that the situation in the country has improved, that they are counting on the governments of their country for peace to return to their country once and for all, so they can start living again, they can start their lives all over. 5 ministers from the Central African Republic, including the Minister of Interior, the Minister of Women's Affairs, and the Minister of Women's Empowerment, are all on the other side of the border to welcome the refugees who are going back home. After about 3 years, they can go back to their country.
Right. Now, Moki, these refugees were reluctant to return home to the Central African Republic. What was their fear in the first place, and what kind of assurances did they have to get before agreeing to this repatriation?
They are afraid because of the insecurity in their country. You know, the anti-Balaka and the armed groups were still very much present, fighting in their country. So the assurance they have came after the Khartoum peace talks that brought together all of the rival factions, the factions that were fighting in their country, and they agreed that peace would return. It is true there were some skirmishes after the peace talks in Khartoum, but for the past 4, 5, 6 months, they have not been conflict. That is why the United Nations High Commission for Refugees, the government of Cameroon, and the government of the Central African Republic think that there is peace already, and these refugees can go back to their country.
Now, only 400 or 500 of these refugees is a small fraction compared to the over 250,000 refugees of Central African Republic refugees currently in Cameroon refugee camps. Is there hope that more are going to be on board with this, that there are more refugees that are going to be returning home soon? Most importantly, I guess the question I wanted to ask is, who is handling the logistics of this repatriation?
There are about 300,000 Central African refugees in Cameroon. Out of that number, only 6,000 have agreed to go back home voluntarily. You see, some are still afraid, some are still reluctant, some are still asking what they'll be doing back home because they are starting their small businesses in Cameroon. But those who are going back are taken care of by the government of the Central African Republic and the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, which have given them some logistics, they have given them some means. The Minister of Central African Republic in charge of Interior was telling us today that they are giving them some logistics, some means to start little businesses and assuring them of their security. And we are sure, from what is said here, that if there is peace and if those who are going now really successfully are installed, then many more want to go back home because their fear is what they will be doing when they get back to the Central African Republic. So logistics are provided by the CAR government, the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, and some assistance by the Cameroon government.
In the population of refugees, are there some who are still skeptical of the peace deal?
Yes, a lot of them. There are about 300,000 Central African refugees in Cameroon. Only 6,000 are agreed to go back. Many of them are still doubting. They still wonder if they are going to be assured of their security when they go back home. So I'm saying that after the peace deal, only about 6 of members of the rebel faction were taken by President Ashraf Tuadera in his government. So they're doubting if the others who are still disgruntled will not start trouble one day. So there are still some who fear going back. But they're saying that they want to observe when the first set of refugees go back, then they will see if the situation is calm before they can start thinking of going back to the Central African Republic.
That was reporter Moki Edwin Kinzika talking with VOA's Jackson Mvunganyi. Zimbabwe has been going through a drought that's being blamed on climate change. 55 elephants have died in Mwange National Park due to shortages of food and water. Reporter Kuzai Vinavashe has more.
Zimbabwe National Park spokesperson Tinashe Farao describes a distressing situation for all animals in the area.
The situation is dire. We are desperately waiting for the rains because there's no water. Most of our boreholes have dried up, and this has resulted in the death of at least 55 elephants. This is the minimum. And all other species which are also succumbing to this situation.
Farao points out the various causes.
This is because the elephants are now overpopulated. The ecological carrying capacity of Hwange National Park is 15,000. When it was created in the 1930s, it had about 2,000, but the maximum was supposed to be 15,000. We are now sitting on more than 50,000. That park is not expanding, but the population is ever growing.
Shelley Cox, Director of Africa Conservation Travel, an organization focused on creating a greater connection between tourism, conservation, and sustainable community development, says drought conditions have left communities and wildlife competing for food and water resources. Government and private stakeholders have been working to ease the situation. Farao says the growing elephant population has led to the animals moving more into communities surrounding the game parks, leading to human deaths and destruction of property, and lending support to the government's request to allow limited hunting and trade in ivory.
The numbers are growing. That's why we've been saying, allow us to trade so that at least we can put the money back into conservation. We believe in sustainable utilization of our resources. We believe that the animals must pay for their own upkeep. We need vehicles for law enforcement. We need also to sink more boreholes, and these boreholes need to be maintained.
Farao says, just this year, wildlife have killed 22 people. He adds that there are individuals and organizations who raise money in the name of wildlife conservation, yet there is no follow-up work on the ground. He adds that communities living around areas with wildlife should also be consulted when trade bans are being initiated. Cox says the Okavango and other parts of Botswana also have been affected by the dry spell. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinamashe from Harare.
In Zimbabwe, a women's coalition demonstrated today at a maternity hospital over the deteriorating health situation in the country as stairway strike nears the two-month mark. Rutendo Maweri reports from Harare.
Dressed in black and wailing at the entrance of Mbuyaneanda Maternity Hospital, the women say they are suffering the most as the health crisis drags on. Zimbabwe's medical system was already strained and suffering from shortages of medicines and other supplies when 30-year-old pregnant woman Sharon Munyono died in August as she sat on a bench after being induced into labor at the hospital. The women allege she died from negligence and the worsening health services in the country. Edna Masiwa, director for the Women Action Group, WAG, was among the demonstrators. She says the country's health delivery system has collapsed.
When we look at the situation in the health delivery system, it's not okay. We have had one woman, Sharon Munyono, who died here at Mbuyaneanda Hospital. And we have heard so many stories of women who are dying in childbirth. And we are saying something should be done. We cannot even say it's declined. We no longer have a health delivery system. And we have come here just to express our anger.
Chairperson of the Women Coalition of Zimbabwe, Ronica Mombire, says that the right to health should be observed.
Section 76 of the Constitution speaks to the right to health, and we implore that the government takes this section of the Constitution seriously and make sure that it is implemented, and make sure that people, when they need emergencies, they get attention. When people have chronic illnesses, they get attendances, and they take it as a priority so that we have a good health delivery system.
The women implored government to address the challenges in the health sector, which among others includes the embassy with the doctors and buying of essential medicines and equipment for hospitals. Government doctors have not been reporting for duty since September 3, saying they can no longer sustain themselves and need the government to address their grievances, which include increasing salaries to counteract skyrocketing inflation. The doctors are also demanding retooling of government hospitals. Minister of Health Obadiah Moyo admitted last week that the doctor's stay away has left only those critically ill getting treatment in public hospitals. Moyo pleaded with the doctors to come back to work, which has not happened despite a court order. Moyo also said government is working on replenishing medicines and equipment in hospitals. For VOA, this is Rutendo Mawere in Harare.
Egypt's government says it has accepted an invitation to meet with Sudan and Ethiopia in Washington to work out their dispute over Ethiopia's Nile Dam project. However, it's not clear that the governments of Sudan and Ethiopia have accepted the invitation or when it will be held. The U.S. State Department has not yet responded to a VOA query about the meeting. Egypt's statement comes a day after Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed told lawmakers that any country trying to block construction of the Grand Renaissance Dam would be met with force. But he said war is not a solution. Abiy this month won the Nobel Peace Prize for his government's reforms and peace agreement with neighboring Eritrea. Ethiopia sees the hydropower project as a crucial source of electricity. Egypt, however, thinks the dam will reduce the flow of Nile water. Abiy is expected to meet with Egypt's President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi this week on the sidelines of the Russia-Africa summit being held in Sochi, Russia. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Douglas Impuga in Washington. And for the latest developments on the continent, 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our Africa News Tonight, our producer Bill Wakinger and our engineer Justin Thwaites, thanks very much for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, thousands have fled the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo following ethnic violence targeting the Banyamulenge community. What's behind the ethnic attacks in the DRC? We'll take a closer look on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC on The Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Escape from the humdrum and dance to the beat of an African drum. Hi, I am David Van, host of The Voice of America's African Beat. Splendid sounds from the continent that all humanity calls home. Join me Monday through Friday at 0900 and 2000 UTC for a soothing musical journey. I guarantee it.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the Sunny Side of Sports, Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.